Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hi, this is Alan Shartok. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, introducing Saratoga OBGYN at Myrtle Street, an affiliate of Saratoga Hospital, formerly Myrtle Street Obstetrics and Gynecology, saratogaobgyn.org for information. Joining us this afternoon to respond to your podiatric questions is Dr. Douglas Tooman of Hudson Valley Foot Associates, popular guest. Lots of calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Tooman, your calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after the news, and then you'll be calling us and you'll be asking about bunions and things like that. So just go ahead and do it. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show, Medical Monday. I'm Alan Shartok. In the studio this afternoon to discuss podiatry and its related surgeries is Dr. Douglas Tooman of Hudson Valley Foot Associates. Dr. Tooman has been practicing podiatry in the Kingston area for more than 30 years. Doesn't look it. He's a graduate of the Illinois College of Podiatric Medicine, diplomate of the American Board of Podiatric Surgeons, also a board certified in foot surgery, and a fellow of the American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. He's also an avid marathon runner. Dr. Tooman, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you, Alan.
For all of you to participate in today's discussion, 1-800-348-2551. Let me read that to you again a little slower. 1-800-348-2551. Okay. So, Dr. Tooman, I have a question for you to start us out.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. When Roselle and I go to bed at night, our feetsies are always cold. So we put on socks. Yeah. But then, you know, a little while later, our feet are warm and we want to take off the socks. What's that all about?
Well, I think she makes you a little bit warm inside.
That's not correct.
Well, it's very common people to have cold feet, no matter what their age, no matter where they live. People in Florida have cold feet. People in the Northeast have cold feet. We get a little colder in this weather. And it's not necessarily a circulation issue because you both have cold feet, and you play footsie with each other. But as you're undercover,
that's not true.
Not anymore. Well, try it again. It warms you up. I know. Yeah. Jenna, my significant other, puts her cold feet on me every night, and
wow.
Then they warm up.
And warms you.
I have to hold my breath and until it warms up. But it's very common to have cold feet and cold tootsies.
Why have to put the socks on? Do they warm up that way?
You're under covers, and you get nice blankets, and you get some body heat, and you warm up.
Well, that's so interesting.
Yeah. Hot air rises.
Well, the phones are ringing like crazy. So rather than deal with my questions, we'll go to theirs. As usual, we'll go to the first question to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, be quick about it. Go ahead.
What is likely to cause ingrown toenails to form?
Hi, Jim. The question is, what is likely to cause ingrowing toenails to form, I believe is what you asked
for. That's right.
So many things, and it's one of the more common things we did. I was almost late today because I had to fix ingrowing toenails, which we can easily chat about. Ingrowing toenails are one of the most common things that podiatrists treat. As far as why they are caused, they're caused for many reasons. You can cut your toenails improperly. You can wear shoes that are too tight. You can injure your toe or toenail. You can absolutely have hereditary predisposition where the nails will change over time. So we do become more like our parents all the time. So lots of different factors, but unfortunately we see a lot of ingrowing toenails initially on kids, but then on adults as well.
Well, what are they?
Ingrowing toenails are nails that actually grow into the sides of the toes.
Right.
So what happens is instead of them having a nice free edge, they're encrypted or they're growing into the skin. Now, the nail is an area with lots of bacteria on there.
Uh-huh.
It's clean to look at, but as soon as it breaks the skin, it's easy for that bacteria to get into the skin. Then you can get an infected ingrowing toenail.
Oh, boy.
So one of the challenges that people have is they have ingrowing toenails and they clip the corners.
Yeah.
But what happens, time after time, month after month, is that they constantly are going back to the bathroom and being bathroom surgeons because the nail continues to follow a pattern. So the cure for it, if somebody has a chronic ingrowing toenail, is what we do in the office is we numb the toe very gently. Once it's numbed, you go back and you take a little wedge of the nail from front to back, from the end of the toe all the way back, and you just take about an eighth of an inch is really all you need, a very small amount. But behind that, just like a hair has a follicle, a nail has something called a matrix, and you put a drop of medicine back there, and you cauterize it, so effectively you've narrowed the nail and you've stopped the ingrowing toenail from growing back.
Is this the largest thing, Doug, that you do in terms of practice?
No, but it's common. We'll do many ingrowing toenails every day.
So it's not the full employment for podiatrists.
It's not the full employment. There's so many things that we do on a daily basis, but it is certainly one of the more, let me just change that. People come back year after year and they say, when you fixed my ingrowing toenail, that was one of the best things you've ever done for me.
Oh, boy. So, okay, Jim, thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
And now we'll go to Ben in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Hello, neighbor. You're on. Hey, Ben, you're on.
Oh, yes. So I've got a question. This is kind of a funny coincidence that your guest today is a doctor, a psychiatrist. I have a wife at home is recovering from a foot surgery from last Monday. She had been complaining about a pain in the middle of basically the ball of her foot, you know, between the big toe ball and the little pinky toe ball, you know, right on the pivot. Been complaining about that for a couple of months. Saw the podiatrist who had initially diagnosed her with plantar fasciitis and sent her to be fitted for inserts due to the ball on the foot. But she complained again and was, you know, back and forth for about four times before she finally saw someone that identified it as a cyst, which she was suspicious that it was in the first place. And what I'm trying to figure out is how might she have been misdiagnosed when, you know, she's in good shape, she's fit, she works on her feet. You know, very, very good build, you know, a runner, basically. My question is this, like, would you think that the appropriate diagnostic question for her would have been, you deal with chronic foot pain? She does have high arches, which is, I think, more or less why this podiatrist immediately wrote it off as a, you know, a foot structural issue when it indeed was not. And then, you know, led her to about 6 months of pain while suffering through this cyst. It's growing and growing, and she's seeing him every once a month or so.
Ben, we got it. Okay, over to the doctor. Doctor.
So, hey, Ben, thanks so much for the call. You know, the foot is a very complex structure, and it's often, if you don't have the right specialist, things will get misdiagnosed in all parts of the body. But there's 26 bones, 33 joints, over 100 different ligaments. And on x-rays, you don't see soft tissue. So sometimes you need additional imaging. Mm-hmm. The plantar fascia is not visualized on radiographs. You cannot see it. We use ultrasound to visualize it. So you have to be a practitioner that has a lot of experience to differentiate things that are common versus uncommon. And you need a patient that you see and you can really get to the bottom of it. You know, patient is just as important. Their history, their location, how the pain is presented, and what things work, what things don't work. So it's easy to fall into the cracks because you see a patient for 10 or 15 minutes and it may or may not get better. And then you see them again. You don't live with them. You know, you just want to do the best you can for them. So we work together with our patients to really come up with the right diagnosis. 9 out of 10 times, it's an easy diagnosis. 1 out of 10 times, it takes some work, maybe an MRI, maybe a second opinion, you know, maybe additional imaging studies like ultrasound. But it can easily get misdiagnosed. We see so many patients that have been to different doctors before they get to our office and get a hopefully an accurate diagnosis and treatment.
Thank you, Ben. Okay, and now on to Brandon in Canajoharie, of all places. Brandon, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you doing today? I was calling because for the last 4 to 6 months and never before, I've had an issue with the bottoms of my feet in the middle of the night. If I get up to go to the bathroom, it is just tremendous pain. I drive for a living, so a long drive to pick up my truck in the morning when I get out. My feet hurt when I get to my route and get out of the truck and take my first steps. my feet are just in tremendous pain. I'm dumbfounded as to what the cause might be.
Hey, Brandon, how old are you? It's Brandon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, how old are you?
Yes, sir. I'll be 35 next month.
Okay. And this is the first time you've had this, correct?
Yes.
And it's every day you wake up with the pain?
Oh, yeah.
You drive and you get out of the car and you have the pain again?
Yep.
Okay. Well, you actually sound like you have plantar fasciitis. So, which is not an uncommon diagnosis, no matter the age. It's common on athletes. It's common on people that have all types of occupations. Doesn't matter. You sit all day. The bottom of your foot has many structures. One of those structures is called the plantar fascia, which is a very, very, it's a very tight band that extends from the heel all the way up to your toes, basically. And sometimes it contracts, tightens up, and when you're off your feet overnight and you stand on it, it actually pulls on the whole bottom of the foot from the heel bone attachment to the middle of the arch all the way forward until you walk it off for a while. And then you sit in the car or the truck and you get out again. It's the same thing over and over again. So that's most likely what's going on. There are some other things this can be as well. But recommendation is that you start to doing some stretching at home, against the wall, off the back of a stair, stretch back and forth with your ankle up and down. But more importantly, since it's been there for almost 6 months, you get into a doc's office so that you can get an accurate diagnosis and a treatment plan to get over this so it doesn't become chronic and long-term at 35.
Okay.
So, thank you
very much.
Plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
By the way, we do have some wonderful new treatments for plantar fasciitis. I know Brandon.
Like what?
Newest thing that we're doing in our office is called radial pulse therapy, RPT,
mm-hmm.
and it's a form of shockwave therapy, but what's beautiful about it is that it's totally non-invasive. It's five treatments, each treatment's 5 minutes, and what it does is it stimulates your own body's autoimmune system to bring healing agents to the area, open up new blood channels and supply.
Do they use it on anything else, like, for example, backs?
It can be on tendons and muscles in different areas. But it's not ultrasound, and it's totally...
Who invented it?
It's been around for a while. The Germans probably invented it many years ago. Mm-hmm. But it comes in high energy and low energy. We have both, but the low energy is just a wonderful treatment because it's in and out, no disruption of your daily activities, stays away from cortisone injections if that's what you want to do, and really gets so many people better. The percentage is very high on this with a non-surgical, non-invasive treatment.
Many
other treatments as well.
And thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
All right, let's go to, let's take a brief moment, and we'll be right back. And we are back. That's great. I'm delighted to be here. We'll go to line number five, and we'll get Paula from Olive Bridge. Okay, Paula, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Dr. Tuman.
Hi, Paula.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I have a question about bunions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what the current treatment for bunions is, and does it always involve surgery?
Well, Paul, it's a great question. Let me explain what a bunion is for our listeners as well. A bunion is a malalignment of the great toe joint. What is that? It's a bone that starts to move from one position to another. So the big toe bone and joint starts to protrude outwards. And the reasons that it's caused, mostly it's hereditary. Sometimes it can be induced by trauma or injury. However, most times it's family history that causes bunions.
Yeah, my grandmother had them.
Yeah, people think shoes cause it, but shoes actually cause the pain of the bunion. But they can progress it a little bit more, but mostly it's grandma, usually the mom's side, but it could be either side. As far as treatment for bunions, it depends upon the level of discomfort. So we often start off with non-surgical treatments. They're not effective in curing a bunion, but they can be effective in minimizing bunion pain. It could be anything from localized treatments where you put a little medicine over the bunion joint itself. It can be topical medicines you put on there. It could be change of shoes. It can be bunion pads and splints, things like that, or the conservative treatments. The surgical treatments have come a long way. I remember when, I'm 60 now, 60 plus, but my grandparents were young, or yours, they were put in the hospital like so many other surgeries, and the bunions weren't done in the way they're done today. So the modern surgeries are just like everything else, done with smaller incisions, with internal fixation, quicker ambulation, better long-term results, less recurrences. So it depends upon your bunion. What makes the differential in the bunion? The x-rays, the size of the bunion, the amount of deviation, the joint, the amount of pain one has. So recommend getting it evaluated and having a consultation, looking at your options. And if it's surgery nowadays, it is much better, but you need to go to someone that does surgery all the time on feet. That's the recommendation. Mm-hmm.
Now, does it get worse with time? Is it better to address it early on?
That's a great question, and we go both ways with it. If someone is a diabetic, we might address it early on while the circulation is good. If someone has minimal pain and the bunion is not severe, we'll tell them, wait it out. You know, it's like a knee or a hip until it gets a little bit more painful. So it's up to the individual. Mm-hmm. You know, it certainly depends on the foot and depends on your activity level, your occupation. So it's a conversation, you know, between the patient and the doctor as to what's best for you. And we do both ways. Sometimes we'll attack it early, and sometimes we'll wait and let it come back in a couple of years and see what happens.
Paula, thank you very much. Okay, we're going to go to Frank, who is headed towards the West Coast, he says. All right, Frank, you're on.
Hello.
Hey, Frank, you're on.
Yes, hi. I'm actually picking you up because I'm driving on Route 20 across the state.
Right.
Following my route in reverse of what I'm going to be is a cross-country walk starting in after Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So my question is about, you know, I know I'm going to take a lot of trauma to my feet. I'm going to be on rural roads, but they're going to be roads. I'm going through communities to talk to people. So I'm, you know, concerned with the repetitive, you know, trauma to my feet and how I can avoid it or, you know, insulate against it, or what advice you might give.
You going coast to coast?
I am. I'm going from Ventura, California, and a diagonal across the country, ending back up in my hometown, which is Plymouth, America's hometown.
Well, that's God fantastic. Forbid I should ask you this question, and I know I'm going to be sorry, but what do you want to talk to them about?
Oh, I want to talk about civic engagement. I'm somebody who never had a hometown or felt I was a service brat. And I was a newspaper reporter up until like a week ago because I've left my job for this. But and I became very involved in the community and was really inspired by it. There's so much that goes on. The legacy of Plymouth is so strong in terms of civic
cool.
engagement.
Oh, cool.
And I wanted to talk to people about civic engagement and,
good.
You know, community involvement.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Frank, back to the doctor. Doctor.
Congratulations, and thank you for doing that. So here's the deal. If we talk to runners or walkers, first of all, your shoes are most important, and your socks are second most important. We change shoes every 400 to 600 miles. You'll be going about 3,000 miles. You'll need multiple pairs of shoes. You're going to burn through those shoes quicker
wow.
than you think. So
do
keep track of
how
your
many,
miles.
How many pairs of shoes are you going to
One's probably going to do about 5 pairs of shoes
wow.
you know, across the country.
Yeah,
and they're going to get wet, and they're going to be in different weather, so you're going to need to have a dry pair and change them every other day. Socks should be blister-proof socks. Those are the kind that you see in the stores that have different wick-away moisture materials. Otherwise, you're subject to blisters. Wherever you stay at night, maybe you can soak your feet in some cool water to reduce inflammation. Maybe you carry some Vaseline with you or something that you can rub on your feet. Have a little kit with you, Band-Aids and, you know, some Neosporin or something along those lines. And make sure your shoes are wide enough and big enough, because tight shoes, the feet are going to swell day after day after day, whether you're running or walking this kind of distance. So make sure you have enough room in your toes. And by the end, you're probably going to need a bigger shoe. So those are some simple precautions that you can take.
That sounds very applicable. That's the kind of information I was hoping to hear.
Okay, Frank, thanks a lot.
Best of luck.
Okay, now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Join the queue. There are only two people on the phone right now, and you call, you'll get your chance, because these go fast. I make sure of that. Let's go to Charles in Pleasant Valley, where everyone smiles. Charles, you're on.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Chad. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I was a military guy. I did a lot of hiking in the military, you could say. And I got out of the military. My wife suggested going to this homeopathic guy who he suggested popping your toes once in a while relaxes you. Do you have anything to say about, you know, like tracking your knuckles? Do you have anything bad or good to say about that?
Nothing bad or good to say. I'll just comment on it. Certainly fine to do if you want to pop your toes, pull your toes, crack them, whatever you want to do. Fine to do as long as it's not painful when you do it. So what people think, it's release of some gases in the joints that you get those popping noises, whether you crack your knuckles, your toes, or what have you. Perfectly fine to do if you feel it gives it a little release. Let it go.
What if you're ambidextrous or whatever, and you can suck your toes? I knew a guy on Fire Island could suck, put his head around his leg around his head and then suck his toes.
He may never leave home. I don't know.
You do that? Yeah. thanks a lot.
Thanks. Okay. No worries on that, though.
No, of course not. Okay, let's see here. Let's see. We'll go to now. We're going to go to Lee in Ghent. Lee in Ghent, you're on.
Doctor, I wanted to follow up on the plantar fasciitis issue because I had it earlier this year, but it stayed with me for about 8 months. I was working in a lab, and for some reason, just standing in the lab created this condition in my left foot that was really crippling me for a while. I saw a doctor and got inserts, and it just took me.
Linda, Lee, you cracked up there. We didn't hear that last part. Could you do it again?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know where I cracked up, but basically I had plantar fasciitis for 8 months.
That we got.
And, you had inserts and then you...
I got inserts, and now I'm just able to wear hiking boots are the most comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. Now it's gone pretty much, I'm still worried about it returning because I do have to go back to the lab and work in the fall. Right. And so I plan to wear my hiking boots. But in the I'm very careful, and I'm wearing the morning.
Now you're
well,
crack,
let me
you're
let me just address
here,
you here a little
here comes
bit.
The doc.
Well,
okay,
I can, but I got most of your question, and you're one of the fortunate ones that had plantar fasciitis. It took a while for you to get over it, and there's different intensity levels and many different treatment options. It sounded like yours were change of shoes and inserts that you got from the doctor, which are usually orthotics of some sort. So that's fine. What you want to do on the home front is you want to also do things. You want to keep yourself flexible, stretch your calf muscles and your foot muscles. Sometimes I'll tell my patients who have plantar fasciitis, take precautions in the house and don't go barefooted on the hard floors. Wear something in the house, whether it's a Merrell clog or a croc, something so you're not barefoot. And when you go to work, just things like that where you're constantly stretching. And, you know, once you have had plantar fasciitis, most of our patients don't get it again. Most get over it and then they're fine. So we don't think that it's going to be coming back just because you're going back to the same environment. But make sure you're wearing shoes with protection, the inserts, and some shock absorption as well, and keep yourself stretched out. Lots of other treatments available if you end up with a recurrence. But for now, you know, don't worry about it so much. Just enjoy your life.
Oh.
Take precautions.
Does massage help?
Massage, rolling it with ice water bottles that are frozen, massaging with your hands or a friend's hands or a massage therapist's hand. Stretching is really good, and not being barefoot is really good. So just a lot of TLC, and wear your inserts, too.
Okay, Lee, thank you. All right, now we are going to... We're going to Robin in Albany. All right. Go ahead. Rock on, Robin.
Yes, hi. I had bunion surgery 11 years ago, and I have this, like, right over the scar, there's a little area that sometimes it gets irritated, especially if, like, it rubs against a shoe, and sometimes it can get almost like it looks infected, and eventually it closes up. And I went to the dermatologist who said that sometimes a plastic surgeon can, like, it's a little cyst, I guess. And I was just wondering if that's what you think, and also is that a result of the scar not healing well?
Well, it's a great question, and Rockin' Robin, hard to answer without seeing it, because anything can be there, and you don't. I don't know if there's hardware inside. Is there a pin?
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I did. I had, I think, two screws put in, and.
Yes.
I actually had it re-x-rayed a couple of years ago because I thought, like, maybe something had moved, but they said not.
Okay. So that's the one thing. Sometimes if it doesn't heal on the incision site, sometimes it could be an irritation from inside from the hardware. Usually those screws are buried into the bone. They should not be a factor.
Yes, yeah.
And then in addition to that, there can be a little keloid or scar tissue over the area that's getting irritated from a shoe. It could be a small little cyst. Sometimes the scar, you know, on occasion needs to be revised and you get out the offending little area that's causing the irritation. So whether it's a plastic surgeon or another podiatrist you can go to, they might be able to revise that. Sometimes we'll inject it with cortisone if it's scar tissue, or we'll use some other topicals that can break up scar tissue. So hard to know without seeing it, but definitely something that should be improved or can be healed, hopefully.
Thank you, Robin. All right, and now we're going on to Linda in Albany. Linda in Albany, your turn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about a situation which I think is called hammer toe, where the toe doesn't lie flat. It kind of sticks up in the middle.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the correct name for
it. Yes, it is. You sounded perfectly. You described it well.
Okay. They don't bother me at all. I've got one on each foot, and I know how I got them. I managed to ram them into the leg of a bed while I was making the bed. I wasn't careful, and I paid for it. They don't bother me at all, but I was just wondering, I've seen claims of various ways that you could cure hammer toes, and I was just wondering what you usually do with hammer toes if they need to be addressed.
Well, it's a great question, and thanks for the call. One of the chapters in my book that's coming out, which Alan is cited in, is Broken Toes, Let's Set Them Straight. And I just want to go back to that for a second. So many people injure their toes, whether it's on the bed or furniture, and it might be broken, it might not, but they're not sure.
How do you do it on both feet? I get it on one foot. How do you get them on both
On the
feet?
Way back, you do the other foot.
That's funny.
That's what I did. I managed to injure one time and another time. And I've been a little more careful since then.
So I am a wise guy.
Called bedpost fractures because that's where they get injured mostly. But I always say, if you're not sure, come in after the injury so we can see if it's broken and set it straight so it doesn't end up as a hammer toe, which is not uncommon to hear what's happened to your toe. So if it's not painful, here's the good news. You don't have to fix it. Most hammer toes are fixed because they're painful. So we don't fix hammer toes that aren't painful in most cases. The surgeries to fix them, there are some wonderful new procedures in case you did have pain or you wanted it fixed to straighten the toe. And they're done with these new internal little mini implants that go in between the toe and keeps it straight and keeps it flat on the floor and readily done. But most of our patients that come in, if they're not painful or not problematic, we'll just say, you know, just get appropriate shoes and live with it. And if you don't want to live with it, we'll fix it.
Okay, Linda, thank you. And now on to Scott in New Paltz. Scott in New Paltz. Go ahead, Scott.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
So are we. Yeah, go ahead.
Great, terrific. Thanks, Doc. I appreciate you taking these calls. I've always had a little patch of what appears to be fungus on one of my toenails. It hasn't spread. I don't feel it at all. It doesn't seem to be affecting my toenail at all, but it's always been there, this little sort of white discoloration over just one toe. And I was wondering if it's hereditary, because I know that my mother had a bad case of toenail fungus, and whether it is or it isn't, is it something I should be worried about?
That's a great question, Scott. I want to add my own me too to that. Go ahead.
So let's talk about toenails and fungus. It's extraordinarily common, and yes, it can be hereditary, but it doesn't have to be. We live in a world where we're in shoes, the temperature's higher, our feet sweat, we're in gyms, we you know, just a lot of fungus all around, and you could bang a toe, you could drop something on, and that can start a little fungus. Now, it can be different colors. It can be white, yellow, gray, thickened, you know, loosened. And you know what? The only way to truly tell if it's a fungus, you can make a good guess by looking at it. Sometimes we'll take a little piece of the nail and we'll send it off to the laboratory, and these specialized laboratories will tell us if it's a fungus, what kind of fungus, what treatments are best for it. But in general, you don't have to worry about it if you don't want to worry about it. I always say if it's discolored of some sort, especially red or black, you want to get it looked at just to make sure it's nothing else. But it sounds like you have a superficial white onychomycosis, which means not a very contagious form of it, which means it hasn't spread, like you said. It's not causing issues. And you can get some over-the-counter antifungals to put on it to see if that helps. In our office, We use either prescription strength antifungals, occasionally oral antifungals. We have laser treatments for it. So a lot of different things we will do, and often we will take a little culture of that nail and send it off, and within a week or two, we'll have a result exactly what it is and if it needs to be treated.
So if he's in New Paltz, he's close to you, right?
Yes, we have offices all over, by the way. Yeah. But yes, close to the Kingston office where our laser is and so on and so forth.
Where you are.
Where we are. We're in Kingston. Yeah, we're right in Kingston, and you can, wherever you want, we're all over the Hudson Valley at hvfa.com. Sorry for that plug, but HVFA, Hudson Valley Foot Associates. You can find one of our offices.
Scott, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting because I go to, every once in a while, Roselle makes me go to a pedicure because, you know, she doesn't want to get killed in bed, you know, with my toes. So I've gone, and I can always swear when I take that sock off, you see that ugly thing there. You know, they look at each other and say, oh, boy, this
I got one of those. You want to take him?
Yeah.
I want the pretty nails.
Now, that is funny. Okay, we're going to Chris in Catskill.
And, of course,
you
can't.
Wait, we're not going to Chris in Catskill. We're taking a break, and then we'll be right back. And we are back, and because all the phones have been loaded up, Dr. Tooman, I thought what we would do is just read two that came in real quickly, and we can do them relatively fast.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So here's one. Mark says, what is the best type of surgery for correcting bunions, and what is the danger of leaving bunions untreated? I'll give you a minute.
Okay, the best treatment, it depends upon the size of the bunion. The most common bunionectomy we do is called an Austin bunionectomy, like the city. And it's very easy to do for us. It's very easy to heal from for most patients. And it allows for a fairly early on ambulation after a week. But it all depends upon the radiographs and if you're a candidate for that. But that's the most common, easiest one to do. And
so ischemy mean you take it out?
Austin bunionectomy means we correct it. We move it over.
Okay.
We get it lined up and prevent it from coming back again.
Okay, that's good. Yes. You use your minute. Okay, then we heard from Brian who said, my question is about a broken toe. I badly stubbed the little toe on my left foot a couple of weeks ago, and because it looked dislocated, I went to the ER. Mm-hmm. The ER doc taped it up next to the next toe and told me to follow up with a specialist. The podiatrist I saw a couple of days later said it was both broken and dislocated, but was unable to get the toe to pop back into place because so much time had passed since the break. Now my toe is healing crooked, and I still can't wear a shoe on that side. Aside from buying wider shoes forever, what are my options?
Well, it sounds like you're going to have that toe repaired if it's really crooked and sticking out, especially a small toe, because it's going to rub in every shoe. So I'm sorry that it's doing that, but it looks like you're going to have to go to somebody that might be able to fix that for you. It's just like any other dislocated joint. If it sticks out and causes pain, it's got to be fixed many times.
So we want to get everybody in so everybody understand. We're going to move along pretty quickly here. Let's go to Chris in Catskill. Chris in Catskill, you're on. Go.
Hi, this is Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because every night on my heel, I get an itch. It's in an area that's calloused. I have a callus on the other side that I take care of. I shave off, whatever. But this is a new thing. And the only reason I'm concerned is because I'm a little bit overweight. I'm 53 years old, and I'm just hoping it's not some kind of diabetic thing or some kind of neurological thing.
Chris, it's probably not. Yeah, it's probably not any of those. But again, if you're diabetic, you always should get your feet checked regularly by your podiatrist, endocrinologist, physician as well. But in general, itching at night, it's not uncommon. You may want to try an antifungal cream or a topical corticosteroid cream, fungal cream first, see if that works. And then again, if you have a large callus there, you just want to make sure there's no area of irritation underneath it that could be a wound or a pre-wound. So you might want to get it looked at if it doesn't go away with topical antifungals or topical corticosteroid creams.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And we're off to, Bob in Western Massachusetts. Okay, Bob, you're on. Rob.
Good afternoon. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm wondering if there are any recommendations for footwear including inserts, getting your feet fit correctly for shoes that would help arthritis in the knees?
Yeah, it's a great question. And Rob, depending upon your feet, they can have a big influence on knees. As a runner and a marathoner myself, I see a lot of runners that have knee pain from foot issues. We see a lot of people with arthritis that develops into the knees from foot issues. So if your feet are flat or collapsed, you want to definitely get into a good podiatrist's office, get your feet aligned with good orthotics and good stability shoes that can be running shoes or other Oxford shoes that have a nice stable bottom that are not overly flexible, fairly stiff-soled and supportive shoes. So orthotics and good shoes can definitely help the knees. So give that a try in addition to whatever you're doing for your knees.
Any names?
Any names of shoes?
Orthotics, yeah.
Orthotics will come from the podiatrist usually.
So then you step in the foam and they...
Or casting. We do casting models. Yeah. And then as far as shoe gear goes, good running shoes, you know, from Brooks to Ultra, Hoka, New Balance, Clarks, you know, just a lot of good shoes out there that are stable.
Thank you, Rob. Okay, now we're going to go to Ernest in East Postenkill. Okay, Ernest, your turn. Go.
Hello. I heard what you said about walking barefoot on hardwood floors, and I agree. But what about walking on the sand at the beach? My mother always swore you should always wear shoes. You shouldn't do it barefoot. We love walking on the beach. Good or bad?
Well, good question, and it could be good or bad. If you're diabetic or if you have issues with your feet, it can be challenging. But if you are healthy and young and you enjoy walking on the beach, you're not diabetic, and it doesn't cause any issues, by all means,
and
enjoy
the diabetes
sand.
What's the diabetes problem?
Well, sometimes they develop something called neuropathy, where they can't feel as well.
Yeah.
So if you step on something, a sharp, you know, you can injure yourself.
I hate it when that happens.
It's not a good thing. But if you have nice, soft sand and you want to walk, that's perfectly fine, and enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, super. Okay.
Thank you very much. We're moving right along. Okay. And now we are going to line number three. That's right. Line number three, Jay in a good state of Massachusetts. Jay, go.
Hi, doctor. I just have a comment and a question relating to your previous discussion of plantar fasciitis. I was surprised that you didn't mention something, and I'm wondering why. My own short story is that I'm 62 years old. About 15 years ago, I've never been overweight. About 15 years ago, I had a lot of heel and also some occasional pain in the tops of my feet. I suffered for a year or two, and I was diagnosed with the plantar fasciitis by an orthopedic surgeon. He sent me to a guy who makes custom orthotics. He took plaster casts of my feet. I put those on. And it was instant relief, and I wear them all the time. I've been completely pain-free for 15 years. Now, so I'm just wondering why you didn't mention that as a possible...
Well, it's a wonderful treatment. We do it all the time. It's just one of the things that everybody should be thinking about for plantar fasciitis would be good orthotics that are designed for you from good cast models. There's other ways to do it as well. But I absolutely agree with you, and great comment.
Thank you, Jay. All right, now let's go to Drew in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Drew in Ridgefield, your turn.
Dr. Tooman, it's Drew. How are you?
It sounds like a familiar voice. Hello, Drew. Congratulations on your marathon yesterday.
Thanks. So I'm 46. I trained well and hard. And then at mile 13, I think I literally got plantar fasciitis for the first time in my life. I couldn't walk. I went to the medic. They wrapped it and gave me Tylenol and said there's nothing else to do except grin and bear it. I finished the marathon. It took me an hour longer. But then 18 to 26, just everything started hurting, you know, knees, mostly knees and the foot. Today I'm rubbing my foot on the golf ball, and it feels good. I heard you talking about orthotics. Store-bought or go to a doctor. I don't know if I'm going to ever do a marathon again or if I even want to, but I don't even know what to think.
Well, first of all, it happened during the race, so you also have to be worried about, not worried, concerned about maybe a small tear that can be occurring during the race. Also, it could be just muscle spasms as you're starting to get a little bit fatigued during the race. It's happened to me before, and it wasn't plantar fasciitis. It was more muscular issues inside the feet from the pounding and the training and the overtraining and so on and so forth. So I would give it a few days before you make any decisions. You know, you want to make any rash decisions. Put ice on your feet, soak them, take some anti-inflammatories, massage them, treat them well, wear shoes in the house, and let's chat about orthotics because I think it makes good sense for you. I wear mine every day. Been a runner my lifetime, wouldn't go without them, whether I'm running or walking. So we should be talking about that, Mr. Berman.
Okay, thank you, Drew. Okay, I'm sorry for cutting you off. I really am. I'm just trying to stay ahead of the game here. There's a lot of people on the line. And now we're going to go to Ann in Beacon. Okay, Ann in Beacon, you're on.
Hi. I've been treating these, or my podiatrist has been treating these fungal toenails for about 3 years. Started with the large toe on my left foot, spread to my fourth and fifth, and now I've also got involvement in my right foot. So he's been treating it with tolmaftate. Is that right? 1%
solution. Tolmaftate,
And laser treatments. Mm-hmm. And obviously things are not halting. It's not horrible, but it seems to be spreading. He seems very reluctant for me to start on an oral, you know, something like a Lamisil kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I wonder about the pros and cons of that.
Okay, so let's talk about fungus and oral medication and laser treatments. Fungus can be difficult to eradicate. And the first question will be, was there a culture taken of your nail? Are you absolutely positive it's fungus versus nails that are just changing over time in life? So you might want to get a culture taken of those other toenails before you get on the oral medications. Tolmaftate works, but doesn't work great. Lasers work a lot better, but not always successful. So oral medications, there's two different ways to prescribe it. 90 pills in 90 days, a pill a day, or we do what's called a pulse dosing regimen, which means we do 7 pills a month, a pill a day for a week, no pills for 3 weeks, and we do that over 4 cycles or pulses, and we get very safe and good efficacy with that as well. The negatives with medications you're taking are side effects, especially with medications, whether it's cholesterol medications or fungus medications, liver toxicities. Mm. So you have to have a healthy liver before you start. So you have to make sure you don't have any challenges. But we prescribe the medications. We just make sure somebody's healthy. We'll occasionally do blood work if we're going to put them on the stronger dose of it. But we never put anybody at more than 90 days. And if you're not responding, certainly consider it, but get a culture of the nail. Just get definitive evidence you're treating a fungus.
Yeah, 90 pills, 90 pills in 90 days.
We definitely did that.
Thank you, Ann. And could you... Oops, I'm so sorry. I'm just trying to move ahead here, get everybody in. You know? Don't blame me.
Fast fingers, Freddie, over here.
Never mind. Okay, so we're going to go to Michelle in Esperance. Michelle, your turn. Go.
Hello, doctor. I was measured for orthotics on a flat electronic surface. Could you please discuss the best way to measure for inserts?
A flat electronic surface. You mean a computer imaging?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was just a flat surface that did, I guess it was an image of the foot when I came off, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, again, it depends upon where that is. If it's Walmart, not a big fan. If it's
was that a podiatrist?
Yes. It depends upon the technique. They might have some high three-dimensional scanners that they use. I can't know if that was the one. That could be fine. Cast models are fine, and foam boxes are fine. We prefer the cast models. We've used the 3D. We've used the foam, and we feel with a better image of the foot, a better cast of the foot and capture of it with a cast model.
Should you go back often? I mean, I've had it done, and then, you know, and those have been in my shoes for 11, 12,
That's
15 years.
Probably something you want to replace every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say it's time for a new one. Yes.
Yeah, I would say
2 to 3 years is what we recommend.
Really?
Yeah. And because they get deformed, the shells change and the shock absorbing materials wear down a little bit.
Is that part of the full employment for podiatrist act?
It is, along with ingrowing toenails.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, now I'm looking at the numbers here. I always go by how long people have been waiting, and Mac has been patiently waiting in Schenectady, of all places. Mac, you're on.
Yeah, I ran over my foot backed over my foot with a ride a lawnmower and smashed my big toe. And of course, it's black on one side, but not on the other side. And as it grows out, it's going to have a hole in it on that side that it got smashed. Mm-hmm. And it hurts when I put pressure on the top, which means that even if I put a sheet on it at night, it hurts. So what do I need to do?
Okay, well, first of all, if it was black without pain, that would be one thing. But black with pain, bed sheets hurting it means there's something going on inside. You got to get it looked at. Having it run over, I would certainly say you need an X-ray to see if there's a fracture. Make sure there's no bone that got infected. I doubt it very much. But it sounds like the toenail is deformed, pressing in. X-ray, possibly you need to start with a new toenail. So sometimes you have to numb it and just get the bad toenail off and let a new one come in. So get yourself to a podiatrist's office, get an X-ray, and see what he can do or she can do to make it better.
So I'm retired. Does the podiatrist take Medicare?
Yes, they do.
Okay, great.
Thanks, yep. Mac. All right, now we're catching up with things. Let's go to Mark in Hudson. Mark in Hudson, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I have what has been explained to me as a deep-rooted callus in the ball of my foot, just under the center toe. And I am trying to figure out if there's anything for that other than orthotics. Is there surgery or?
Yeah, it's a challenging one because, just to make it quick here, there's a bone underneath that area that's giving too much pressure, which is actually causing that deep-rooted callus. Medically, we call it an IPK, intractable plantar keratosis. It doesn't work to excise the callus because they just keep coming back. You can trim it and get some relief. You can get an orthotics and get relief. But sometimes you have to either plane or elevate the bone or fix a toe that's causing the metatarsal to be pushed down. So there are cures for it, and it is a very painful. Yeah, hammer toes contribute to the angle of the metatarsal causing that deep-rooted callus. So sometimes we fix that whole area and make it all better and get you pain relief long-term,
Mark,
forever.
Mark, thank you. I'm just trying to get everybody in. Don't be too mad at me, folks.
Well, let me make an offer. If you can't get on, you can send an email to our office at hvfa.com on our website.
hvfa.com.
Yep, and you can always get a question in. We'll call you back or send you information back.
We are running out of time here, folks. So now we're going to go to line number 8, and we're going to talk to Susan. Okay, Susan, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering if one has a hammer toe, not as a result of an obvious injury, what might be the treatment for it?
Well, it doesn't matter what causes the hammer toe. A hammer toe is a hammer toe is a hammer toe. Sometimes we just have to fix it. Sometimes we give you some paddings, and sometimes we'll, you know, treat it otherwise with corns or shoe modifications, what have you. But it's still a hammer toe, and it may need to be fixed if it's painful.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Oops, see, there I went again.
Fingers Freddy.
2 minutes. Fingers Freddy. Reminds me of a judge I once saw. Okay, let's go to Lisa in South Glens Falls. Okay, Lisa, you're on very quickly because we're running out of time here. Go ahead.
Hello, doctor. I am a 68-year-old female. I've developed knock knees, and I have one foot that's supinating. Is there anything of a diet can do to help me with this?
You know, I have to look at your whole gait cycle and see if you're a candidate for orthotics to change or modify your gait. Challenging one at this age to change a knock knee position, but certainly something, go to a good podiatrist that deals with orthotics and mechanics, and maybe they can help you.
Okay.
Hard to know. Best of luck.
I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you, doctor.
Okay. You're welcome.
We are now officially out of time. I just wanted to thank Jay in St. Johnsville. Unfortunately, he was the last guy on, and we didn't have time for him. But Jay, I want to apologize. And the same thing for Lisa, who has just called up from South Glens Falls. We apologize to her, too. Thanks to our friend Dr. Douglas Tooman of Hudson Valley Foot Associates for joining us today. Support for the Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our brilliant engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned now for a little theme and then a news update. Thank you.